red button here, and we are away to the races. What this microphone is now doing is recording this talk. And you might ask, well, what's he doing? He's recording the talk. What's so different and new about that? Well, first of all, I'm just recording it on my computer, and so it's a computer like everyone else has a computer. Here's the microphone. Like I say, you can use cheaper microphones and you just get lower quality sound. You can probably spend like thousands of dollars or rands or whatever on microphones and you can get beautiful sound. I've sort of gone for the middle somewhere, so I only get 3 to 5 complaints at a time. The second thing is, this program, Audacity, is free and open source software. I paid nothing for it. And as you can see, Audacity will record on this nice two-track. If I wanted, I could record something alongside it. So if I wanted, say, I could import a song and give my talk a soundtrack or whatever. I want to try that one. I've never tried that. So, you know, sooner or later, I'm going to take one of my talks and, you know, I don't know, drums or something in the background and kookaburras or whatever, just to see what it sounds like. Other people do that. And then basically what I'll do, and I can't demonstrate this here because I'm still recording, and I'm going to turn this down because I did this once and I got a complaint. Please, I don't want to watch that thing record anymore. What I'll do is I'll save this, I'll export it as an MP3 file. How many of you are familiar with MP3? Yeah, just about everyone, right? So I'll save that as an MP3 file, and then I'll save it at a fairly low rate so that, you know, for an hour-long talk, it'll save as about 6 or 7 megabytes, and then I'll upload it to my website, and I have an audio cast of this talk. You might think, well, that's pretty self-centered, and it is, because I have all my talks, and I look at all my talks, and actually I've got some on my iRiver here, and I put my iRiver on the speakers when I go to sleep at night, and probability being what it is, sooner or later, it stops playing songs and hits one of my talks, so I talk myself to sleep. Never thought that that would be possible, but there you go. It's kind of neat. But the idea here is, and the thing I want to stress is, what I am doing, and in fact, what I am doing at this exact very moment, without even thinking about it, is creating a learning resource. Am I right in front? And the idea here, and the whole point of my talk today, is to emphasize and to stress that this is the sort of thing that you can and should be doing right now with tools that are currently available, is creating your own learning resources. Those of you, especially those of you who have been working with learning management systems and designing and developing online courses, you've probably been told a lot about how expensive it is, how time-consuming it is, how you have to do a lot of work, the instructional design, working with the subject matter expert. Does all of that sound familiar? Yeah. I don't do any of that. I used to do that. I hated it. Because how would the person had to track down the subject matter expert? And, you know, of course, putting the course online is the subject matter expert's lowest priority, top priorities in their class, which is, you know, 5 minutes from now. And then, you know, on down the line to actually digitizing the materials. At least that was my experience. Your mileage may vary. But in the time that I've been working since then, I've taken the approach that creating e-learning resources can be, and indeed should be, a lot less formal, a lot more chaotic, a lot more ad hoc. And the approach that I've taken is basically get the content there, whatever it happens to be. So in this case, I'm doing a talk here in a room in Cape Town at the University of Cape Town. Sometime in 2006, you notice how I'm localizing the audio tape so people know what I'm doing. And while I'm doing that, I'm simply recording it. Then I'll make it available online. I will license it in such a way that any person in the world from this point forward can take my talk and can do whatever they want to it. Extract a clip, construct a clip, you know, use different bits of my voice. We have your doctor, you know, and you know, the ransom note only an audio clip. So that was my voice, never mind. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. Maybe I should turn off my instant messaging during the talk. What do you think? There are secrets, dark secrets. So, that, and the thing is, you create these resources, you create them on the fly, you get them up there, and what happens, and this is my whole talk in like the first 10 minutes, what happens is, other educators or learners or other people who are just interested or total strangers take your bits and pieces of material, reorganize, repurpose, reformat them. It's like they're writing in a different kind of language where the words consist of bits of audio and bits of video and maybe some animation or photographs or whatever. And it's almost as though they're words and they're creating new sentences out of that. And so the knowledge, the content, whatever, that's in this audio propagates through a population by the population bringing it in, making it its own, and then passing it forward. That's the theory. And the practicality is the set of tools that I want to talk about today. So, that's the introduction. For those of you who don't know, my name is Stephen Downs, and I'm here from Canada. And I arrived late last night, and I leave early tomorrow morning, but I have had a chance to look around the city for a little bit. And I do welcome all of you, and I would like to say that this talk is for you, so you should feel free at any point to interrupt, to ask a question, to throw things at me, but not hard, sharp things, please. To request that I stop talking about this topic and start talking about that topic, the whole works, right? I will feel perfectly happy to diverge from the program that I have into talking about whatever it is that you would like to talk to me. You know, Russian philosophy, no problem. I know. Go right ahead.
Have you had any experience with turning audio tapes into text files using voice recognition or encryption software?
I've worked on it, and the best and most effective solution that I've found so far is to send it to a service that's based in India, and they do it manually. As I'm serious. And they do it manually. It cost me $43 Canadian for an hour, and I thought that was very reasonable. I've worked on with speech recognition software, like, for example, Dragon Naturally Speaking, and the problem is the quality of the audio tape is still not sufficient, in my experience, for the audio transcription, the Dragon Naturally Speaking to recognize. You should have seen me in the office trying with my tapes, and so we're still not there. But also, too, even if we had it running right now here in front of us, it probably still wouldn't be working. And you wouldn't want all the punctuation in my talk, period, new paragraph, capitalized, open quote, you know what I mean. So, yeah, I tried, not there yet. But, you know, I mean, the neat thing is, and my experience here is, when you create things and put them out into the open, if people need your thing in some other form, they will make it for themselves. So my audio tape would become available in text if somebody needed it that way, because they would just type it out themselves. And so I don't need to worry about that. It's only when I'm trying to control all aspects of my work that I need to take into account, okay, I've got to do the text, I've got to do this, I've got to do that. To see this in action, when I was in Bloemfontein four or five days ago, we did a Skype cast, and I'll talk a bit about Skype cast in a bit, but basically what a Skype, I'll talk about it now, okay. I have this little voice in the back of my head, normally it's very quiet, but sometimes it says, no, anyhow, I like my little voice. You're supposed to laugh, sometimes it's, okay. We're doing a Skype cast. A Skype cast is, again, I'm using this microphone, only it's instead of, or rather in addition to recording it, I'm also sending it out over Skype, and people who have Skype, which is like an internet telephone service, can connect to it through Skype and then get a real-time audio of my talk. So as I speak, they are listening to it. And they can do this for free, and they can do it anywhere in the world. So I have people in Canada, I have people in Cairo, and people in Australia, lots of people in Australia, because it's evening for them. But the thing is, yeah, it wasn't really working perfectly, because it was, you know, my first time trying this. And I left one of the switches off. And so for a while, there was just silence for a lot of people. And what happened, and of course, it's all audio, all voice, right? And people invariably have problems with their audio. Their speakers go out, whatever. So there was somebody listening to the Skype cast who did a summarization. As I went along, she typed out what I was saying. And that's what I mean by, if they need it, it will be produced, right? Because I didn't try to control the process. And that's the subtext of my talk today, too. The first main text is you're creating these learning resources off, you know, like on the fly, quickly, cheaply, and all of that. But the subtext is you have to give up control of them. You have to put them out into the world and let them assume a life of their own. And that's very hard for creative people. It's hard for me because I'm a creative person. I do a nice photograph. You know, I don't want people messing with my photograph. But you put it out and it becomes something else. And whatever need it needs to serve is served by letting go of control. How many of you have done work with learning objects and things like that? One person. How many of you have heard of learning objects? Now you can see the problem with the concept, right? About half of you know of learning objects, but only one person actually works with them, which should tell us something about that kind of resource. But the thing is, with learning objects are built, constructed, put together using an instructional design methodology. At the core of a learning object, you have your learning objectives, and then, you know, you have your content, your learning activities, your assessment. All of that is put together. The concept is you plan these things all ahead of time. So you have to, you know, you build a learning object, you have to have the text version of the object, or you know, the ASL version of the object, or multiple languages. You have to adapt for multiple learning styles, all of that, have ways for different institutions to access them, different learning methods. Planning everything ahead. You've got to anticipate everything, because when this learning object is shipped from wherever you are to whatever learning management system is going to use it, it's going to be frozen in time by copyright restrictions, by technology. If you use the IMS system of content packaging, it'll be all put together, it'll be zipped and on a disk, and so it'll actually be, you know, ontologically, it'll have the same status as the book. And that's the model, right? You do everything up front, and then you put it on the shelf, and then people come and take it off the shelf and teach it in their class. But the thing is, you can't anticipate all the possible needs. Learning objects, you know, online learning for control freaks. You have to let go. You have to desegregate, disaggregate all of the content of the learning object. The content of the learning object just is audio, video, text, multimedia. And you let that be separate. You let that be unorganized. The organization will happen at the time of learning. And the organization will be done by the learner, or perhaps an instructor in a classroom who's pulling stuff together at the last minute because they have 5 minutes in front of their class, or by somebody who's doing something completely unrelated to e-learning but they just want to use your object. One of my photos is being used by some artist. I forget where he is, but what he does is he builds great big tubes and then talks city governments into installing these things. So he took a picture of my, took one of my photos of Toronto and developed the concept that he was going to present to Toronto City Council to put a great big tube art, piece of art in Toronto Harbour. I didn't really like it. That was a long-winded answer to your question. I hope that was okay. You see, when I give a talk, I'm a bit like a glacier. And you can nudge me off topic, that's no problem. But then I get on a roll, and I keep going in that direction. Now, the reason why I couldn't find my PowerPoint presentation is because it's not one. This is Firefox. How many of you use Firefox? Oh, that's good. Almost half. Firefox is the browser you should be using instead of Internet Explorer. It is free, open source software. It is actually secure. Oh, I get to show this off. I'm going to do this. I like doing this. So they had all these problems with learning objects, localizing learning objects, making them adapt to different institutions and so on and so forth. But it really is very easy to just change up the look and feel of your learning object as long as you're not really worried about controlling everything. You just let things be in different places. And say, oops, that's not the one I wanted to hit. Of course, you have to hit the right button. There we go. I thought it was taking a long time. So, I like doing this. All the different, you know, it's all the same content, but, you know, that was the theory of learning objects, right? You'd have content, and then it would localize, and it would all happen automatically. But then it got all wrapped up in learning management systems and wrappers and all of that stuff, and it went so far away from the model of the World Wide Web that simple things like changing the theme became impossible, or at least, more accurately, very difficult. Certainly nothing that you can do just with the click of a button. How many of you are online right now? Okay. None of you. Why not? Get wireless. My little computer picked it up. You see, if you were online right now, you could be in conversation with your friends who are here in the room, sending messages back and forth about what a bad speaker I am, or if I say something about learning objects, as I come in here and I make these bold, audacious claims about learning objects, and you could Google it. In fact, there's a name of a person who sits at the back of the room, and a person like me comes in and pretends to be an authority and gets up here and pontificates and goes on like crazy. And the person at the back of the room, they have their own screen right here. And I talk about things, and that person Googles it. And the resources come up, and they Google it, and they find some resources. So it would look kind of like this, right? Here's why you use Firefox, by the way. You never have to actually go to Google. So this is what the screen would look like, and they're doing their thing, learning objects. Oh, EdgyWorks has made their way all the way to the top. They worked very hard at that. Because learning objects is ultimately a commercial thing. They just, is what I said about learning objects, right? Yeah, and they'll very quietly, I say one thing, and then they highlight something that's the contradictory of what I say, or whatever. But as you can see, it's chunks, Legos, all of that sort of stuff. But, so anyhow, the name of that person is the Google Jockey. I'm not sure if I said that already. I guess not. So, really, I mean, and I'm going to do this eventually. Okay, we have to stop thinking about everything's prepared, everything's organized, everything's in control. Look at what we're doing right now, right? Like, who's running the show here? Like, me, mostly, right? I'm trying to give you guys control, and I had one person say a question, but really, I should be properly giving up control in a way that doesn't require that, you actually stand up and identify yourself and all of that. I should have one screen with the Google Jockey here. I should have another screen with what they call the back channel. And the back channel is all of you guys, and you're all online, of course, maybe with your PDAs or your thumbing on your mobile phone, or even you brought your computer, whatever. Right? And the back channel is where you can chat to each other in a common place. So I'm standing here, the back channel behind me, so I can't see it. And I say, blah, 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 and then somebody types anonymously, what an idiot, or whatever. It's losing control, right? It's allowing people in the audience to take control of what the audience sees. I am a catalyst. I am not, you know, the source, the fountain of knowledge and all of that.
jot.downess.com. Yes?
Well, yeah, you should think about that. Of course, then again, you haven't paid, you're not really, never mind. No, I am not downplaying the role of the expert. I am changing the role of the expert. And that's an important distinction. You know, a lot of people talk about, well, this audio recording is going to be really wild because it is in stereo and somebody's sitting at home and it's going to be like, I'm walking around them. They're sitting there and I'm walking around. It's like one of these, you know, old movies, interrogation. You will tell us where the arms dump is. And they sort of get a spotlight on it. Never mind. I think of strange things when I do talks. How do I want to say this? There's a lot of talk about learner-centered learning, and the way this talk goes is it's as though the teacher, the instructor, the expert sort of says, go out into the world, and then steps away and watches the inevitable disaster. And if that were learner-centered learning, I would have no part of it. I would have no part of it because it requires that I stand back and say nothing, despite my expertise, and watch the disaster happen. If the disaster is in the process of happening, I am going to get involved. Because as a person in the room, as a person in the learner-centered room, I have at least as much ability to talk and participate as anybody else. And if everybody else in the room is content to let me talk, then I'm going to talk. So, it's not eliminating the role of the expert. It's changing the dynamic. It's changing the authority of the expert. People can still be experts, but being an expert does not mean that you're in control. Does that make sense?
I hope to see more of it.
Are any of you familiar with the book by James Sirwicki called The Wisdom of Crowds?
Okay. Here's how this works.
If you take an expert and you take a group of people who are not experts, it needs to be a large enough group. This group might not be quite large enough, but it's probably close. And you have the expert say something, you know, make a prediction or whatever, in the area in which they're an expert. You know, so they're not just blindly guessing, right? They're actually making an informed guess. And then you have the rest of the people each guessing individually. The people are going to come up with a more accurate result than the expert. And you might be thinking,
no, there's no way. I forgot. I was going to bring my little pocket speakers today, but I didn't bring them. But I'm still going to do this. Let's do it this way. This will be faster. This is why I wanted to use this computer. On that computer, this would take about 10 minutes. it's not on this one. Oh, darn. Okay, well, I am doing it on this one, then.
So, hang on, this will take just one second here. And I would be doing this all at the same time, except my eyes are really rotten and I can't see
There we go. Okay, you can actually turn them off again. You'll have to listen. Like I said, I forgot my speakers. I went to a conference in Toronto about 3 years ago. Well, in fact, almost exactly 3 years ago. It was called Idea City. And it's one of these conferences. They bring, all the astronomers and paleontologists and criminals and writers. They bring them all together and And one of the speakers was a singer by the name of Nico Case. You've never heard of Nico Case. She's American, born in Virginia, but she's part of the Vancouver, Seattle indie music scene. And she comes in, it's a room much like this, except they have a much larger crowd, and she only has 22 minutes. 22 minutes because that's the length of a half-hour program in Canada, and they're videotaping it. And she says, I'm going to record a song. So we have all this beautiful equipment here, I want to record a song. And so the instrumentals, such as they are, have already been done. And she sings the main chorus of the song. It's only a 3-minute song, so it doesn't take very long. She's got lots of 22 minutes left. And then she says, now, I want all of you to be the background vocals. And the way she explains it, because now, I'm sitting in that room. In fact, I'm upper left to you. Way in the back, because that's a good spot to be. Because you might get water on you or something. And I'm thinking, no, wait a sec, I do not sing. Or more accurately, I have sung, and people have asked me to stop. And so, I don't want to do this, and so she knows this, right? And she says, you may not want to do this, and I'm sitting there, she read my mind, and because you can't sing. Miraculous. But you shouldn't worry, because one person in a crowd invariably sings out of tune. Certainly they don't sing as well as the professional singer. But the entire crowd sings as well as the professional singer, and in fact, sings better. And you might think, again, impossible. How could that work? How could a bunch of people, each of whom cannot sing a note, sing better than Nico Case? Here's Nico Case. Nice singer. I like her a lot. Song here a bit. Now, listen carefully to the background. Can you hear it? That is a room full of 300 completely untrained and verifiably bad singers. And I know this because I were one. So, how does that happen?
Well, I'm shutting this down because there's zero battery left, so
that's all the music for this talk. There's a bunch of things happening, and Sir Ricky looks at it, and other people look at it. And what happens is, first of all, the bad notes cancel each other out.
So as long as you're trying for the thing, right, you're aiming for a point, the missed notes, and in fact somebody singing too low, somebody singing too high, you get the two of them together, it's right in the middle. So if you're all aiming for the right note, a large enough crowd is going to get it.
An important thing is the autonomy, and this is why you need to seed control. Right? If you all followed the direction of someone and tried to all sing, like let's say the whole crowd tried to sing the same note I'm singing, it would sound bad. But each person individually does their best. And each person individually doing their best means that
the overall performance of the crowd isn't going to be swayed by a bad example. That's why you give up control. That's why propaganda is bad and open democracy is good, because when you have one person trying to control things, did I say democracy is bad? No, never mind. When you have one person trying to control things, right, they might be leading you into singing a bad note. But if each person does what they want to do to the best of their own ability, then overall it works out to the best of all possible combinations. That's the principle. And interestingly, you find that sitting there right in the last chapter, the last page of John Stuart Mill's book on liberty. It took us 100 years to actually figure out how that works in practice. So, the expert doesn't seek control. The expert becomes, and this is how I view myself, and it's important you understand this, the expert sees himself as one voice in the crowd, one voice in the chorus. Low disk space. Won't that be fun? What should I kill? Which band don't you like here? I better not. Some of those I really don't want to get rid of. By ABBA. Isn't that awful? Don't you hate seeing that? Whee! It's okay. I have it all on CD, and I didn't want to ruin my presentation. So, and that's how I was picking. It's not that I really don't like ABBA, because I do like ABBA. There, I've said it. It's just that I can re-record ABBA. So, anyhow. So, how does the group take control? I want you to see something, think about something here too. I've been letting myself be swayed. There's still a theme and a purpose, and there's a thread to this talk, isn't there? It's not as easy as if I stood up there and said, okay, here's the narration, here are the 10 points on how to be a good business executive, and point number one isn't to rattle through the point. It's not as easy to follow that. But there is the thread. There are the streams, the strands, because of the talk, because my belief about ideas, my belief about content, including learning content, is that it should be, ought to be, and is structured in the same way. We have the wisdom of crowds, the network of people, each working autonomously and independently, and yet able to create a chorus. Ideas work the same way too. You probably learned in English, in your English class, or if you took Afrikaans in your Afrikaans class, that the way to create textual material, you write your sentences one sentence at a time and things lead one to the other. Or if you took logic, you probably learned about formal proofs and things like that, and premises and conclusions. This is a different structure, where you have the ideas in a space, idea, and the ideas are linked and related to each other. And through the presentation and the moving about of these ideas, that chorus emerges. And that structure that I've just described to you, the little points and hand movements in the air, is exactly the structure of the World Wide Web. Which is why these tools, these Web 2.0 tools, are so powerful. And why you get the chorus that comes out of them. And in fact, I'm going to go here, which is actually my talk. But, no, it's not even loading. And well, this loads in the background. I'm not even going to see it, maybe. Nope. I want to show you the chorus in action. Thank you.
How many of you have heard of Wikipedia?
Sure. You've all heard of Wikipedia.
Wikipedia
basically is created without control. It is the creation of the chorus, more or less. Now why isn't that Wikipedia?
No, you know what it is? Okay, it still hasn't loaded here yet.
So you try to plan ahead. You plan your technology ahead, right? And here's how browsers work. Here's how a lot of software works, right? You start a page load, hit enter, and now it begins to load. And you're waiting for the page to load, and you figure, okay, I'm waiting for the page to load. I'm going to go somewhere else and do something else, which is what I do that all the time. That's how I ended up writing it all, right? It's waiting for the World Wide Web. If the web had been fast... So you're typing on this other page, and right in the middle of what you're typing, the first web browser pops up. Right? It maximizes while you're doing something else because it says, I'm done loading. They must want to see it right now. Which, of course, is not the case. I would at least like to finish the sentence I was writing instead of inserting some random commands into some other program that has just arbitrarily popped up. Anyhow, you can't plan these things ahead. That's the difference between Microsoft and software that works. The Microsoft, they've tried to anticipate every possible contingency that could happen to somebody using one of their pieces of software and code for it. You can't do it. With each iteration, Microsoft products were pretty good when they started out, but with each iteration of the software, it gets worse, not better. Because they add more features and try to anticipate more things. They should disaggregate it, break it apart, have the column thingy here, the page formatter here, you bring these things in as you need them. I never use columns in Word. I don't need all the software that supports columns in Word. But if I did need it, I should be able to just grab a module and link to it rather than plug it in. Anyhow, Wikipedia. A study was done in the scientific journal Nature to test the accuracy of Wikipedia as compared to that other encyclopedia, Britannica, and found that the two encyclopedias were roughly equally accurate. Wikipedia has 1 million separate subject entries. Encyclopedia has fewer. Wikipedia has more readers today than Encyclopedia Britannica. And Wikipedia has not only a birthday, but also a death date for Steve Irwin. And even had Britannica had this listing, which it doesn't, it would not have the death date. And would not have the death date for another 5 or 10 years. I feel badly that Steve Irwin died, and he died just at the beginning of this trip, so I have decided to mention him at least once during all of my talks, because I like what he did. He dedicated himself to learning, and he dedicated himself to showing people about, the natural world and that, and did it in such a way that when you taught children about crocodiles or nature in general, you didn't do it inside a classroom. You did it inside the wilderness area. And I actually saw Steve Irwin. I didn't actually ever talk to him, but this may take a little while. Oh, not that bad. Okay. And visited his Australian zoo. And we'll get to it here. Here we go. Oops. I passed it. I've got to redesign that. I'm learning all kinds of things about slower bandwidth. So those are my photographs from Steve Irwin's Australian Zoo, and I saw him do his thing. I even got some video of him working behind the scenes. So I've always felt, although I've never actually talked to him, I felt like he was in a way kin with me, and so I was saddened when he died. Anyhow, I really liked this zoo.
especially this guy.
So, Wikipedia is an instantiation of the wisdom of crowds. Wikipedia is not perfect. And people will go to all lengths to tell you that Wikipedia is not perfect. And they will say, look, the crowd does stupid things. And you know what? I'd be the first to agree. The crowd does stupid things. I mean, people have made Paris Hilton famous. Think about that. Right? My response is, experts and authorities do stupider things. I mean, compare the information you receive from blogs and other authors on the web as compared to information you receive from the newspapers. Now, I've been on all three sides of the newspaper game. Three sides? Yes. First of all, as reader. Secondly, as, I don't want to say publisher, because I wasn't a publisher, but you know, I was on the production side. I was a writer, I was an editor, I even did the page design and things like that, photographer, sports editor, if you can believe it, and then also have been covered by newspapers, because I used to be really politically active. Newspapers, I can tell you, from all three sides, are no more reliable than the news that you get through blogs. And in fact, because newspapers are in the hands of a small number of people, they can systematically mislead, and therefore, in certain ways, are less reliable. A book I read a long time ago, out of print, unfortunately, although I keep talking it up, so maybe they'll reprint it one day, is by someone called Eleanor McLean, called Between the Lines. And she analyzed newspaper coverage in Eastern Canada and put it in the form of a set of logical fallacies. And that set of logical fallacies and that listing later became the basis for my set of logical fallacies. Anyhow. Now. Type in the correct address this time, downs.jot.com, and that way we won't get downs.com what you need when you need it, which is kind of, yeah, your own downs.com email address.
Yeah, well, I'd like one of those.
So, what I'm connecting to is something called JotSpot. JotSpot is a wiki. What I'm connecting to slowly. Or were you raising your hand?
Yeah, I was just asking you to read that on Blackboard. And I could see whether you have any ideas about working with a group of students, you know, a very clearly defined group, as opposed to working in the way that you are suggesting.
Okay, so you're asking how would what I'm saying apply if you're working with a group of students? Yeah, how do I want to put that? I do have time since JotSpot's still loading. You see, the problem with that question is, in a way, it's kind of like saying, how do you make airplanes go through railway tunnels? And the answer, in one sense, the answer is, you can't. And in another sense, the answer is, and you wouldn't want to. And the third part is, even if you could, and even if you wanted to, it would be really dangerous. So, because, the approach that I'm talking is very much thought of as an approach that applies after classes, in an environment where you do not organize learning by subjects and classes and things like that. So it becomes difficult. And generally when I talk about it, I sort of talk about layering it in. And You have to understand at the outset that the end objective is to be able to offer this kind of learning without a small group, without a predefined curriculum. So that's the end goal. And so that these things that you have now are limitations on what you're doing rather than enablers. Everybody thinks of schools and curricula and all of that as things that make education possible. My take is they actually slow it down. How much time do I have?
You have until 2 o'clock, approximately 2 minutes.
Okay. So, you sort of bring it in a little bit at a time. And the way I would do it is I would model the behavior. Model the type of thing you want your students to be doing, as opposed to telling your students to do it, which is a way of guaranteeing either that they won't do it, or if they do do it, they won't like it. And so you model it. If you want them to write, create your own blog, start writing, give your students the address, and then suggest that they might want to write too, and perhaps, maybe, if they're good enough, might be linked to you. Start a wiki and say that the students can contribute to it if they want. Now, somebody has put a budget on my... Okay, well that's different. Oh, because I'm not logged in. Make your class outline a wiki. A wiki can be edited by any of the students in the class, which means when you come in to teach your class, the class outline might be completely different than what you started with. Record your classes and put your classes online, your recordings online, and tell your students, you don't have to come to the class, you can listen to the recording instead, but you can't really ask any questions of the recording. You see what I mean? Make it a choice, they can use it or not, their call, and model the behavior. Right? Produce your own content and then put it out there. Open source your content, open access your content, and act as the example of that sort of learning that you would like. Probably my last 2 minutes are up by now, and where did the time go? I do hope that this talk was useful and informative. It didn't exactly follow the plan that I had intended, but that sometimes happens. So thank you, and I guess I'm doing another talk in a little bit, so thank you very much for dedicating part of your lunch hour to me. I really appreciate that.
And thank you, Stephen, for subverting our assumptions and for sharing some good, challenging examples of how this can work. The next event is at 2:30 in Puri Kwata Building or an old care from Syria.